You're listening to The Journey Podcast. The Journey is a ministry of Southcrest Baptist Church for those in college or college-aged. We hope this podcast helps you find your greatest pleasure and purpose in Jesus. Hey, man, I am so glad that you guys are here. Tate, I think he said it, but like, including tonight, we've got three more TNGs, okay? So we're kind of winding down. And so, man, it's been just such a great semester. We've got some great things planned for the summer, if you're sticking around for the summer. And then, man, before you know it, the fall will be here. But we're going to focus on tonight, okay? So some of you may have joined us after we started our God Stories series. But we're gonna jump back into this. And so tonight, and then in 2 weeks, we're gonna finish with this series as well. So we've got two more weeks of this series. And so if you have your Bibles, you can go ahead and turn to Judges chapter 14. Kind of the idea behind this series is we're taking these Old Testament stories, because what happens is oftentimes we take Old Testament stories, especially like if you're just kind of doing a reading plan or something like that, and we take these Old Testament stories and we kind of lift them out of the Bible, right? And kind of take them out of their context and we just isolate them. And I think what happens is when we do that, you're kind of left with just kind of like morality stories, right? Like, man, like, you know, like dare to be a Daniel, like that's what you need to do, right? Or like, man, David slayed Goliath, you need to slay your giants, right? Like those, and while those things may be true, like they kind of miss the heart of what God is trying to do. Because here's what we tend to forget. Maybe you've forgotten this, or maybe you've never been taught this. I know for me, like it's easy for me to forget this, but God is a masterful storyteller, okay? And so he's taken these stories that he's placed in the scriptures, these events, these stories, and he's put them there to lead us to point us to the ultimate story, the story of Jesus. And so all of these stories that we read, like they're there to point us or show us something about Jesus when we read them. And so every time you read these stories, you need to be asking the question, like, what does this teach me? How is this pointing me to Jesus? Like, I've got the lens now, the Jesus-colored lens, where I can read these stories. How is this story pointing me to Jesus? And so tonight, we're going to look at one of those stories for me, which is like really easy to kind of isolate and take out of its context. We're going to look at the story of Samson. And I remember growing up, like I grew up in church and Sunday school, like kids ministry, and I remember like the story of Samson is all I remember of this story is like, man, Samson was like this, every picture I saw of him, he's like this massive dude. Okay, he had long, luxurious hair. He kind of killed a lot of people, right? Like that's just kind of what I remember about Samson. He had a thing for this girl named Delilah. Okay, that's really it. I mean, how many of you are with me? Like that's kind of like what you remember about Samson. Anyone else? Like if I was to ask you, like, hey, tell me the story of Samson, that's probably what you would recall, right? Like, hey, this is what I remember about this guy. But here's the thing, like when we read this, it kind of shocks me that we tell this story to kids, okay? Like in children's ministry, because this story is really dark. Like when we read it, it is a really dark story. Samson is not a good person at all, okay? He's not a good person, and it's in a book, the book of Judges, that is a dark book. Like an extremely dark book. And when you read it, like when you read the book of Judges, like from chapter 1 all the way to chapter 21, like there's not a lot of redemption in this book, if any. Like you don't come away going, oh yeah, that was really uplifting. Actually, you're kind of left with a lot more questions than answers when you read this book, right? This isn't typically where you go, like if you're trying to do like some devotional reading with some friends, like in a coffee shop. You, like you don't get together and you're like, hey, let's go through the book of Judges together. This will be really, really great. No, it's not. In fact, like if you were to, let me just give you an example. I'm trying to figure out. Yeah, I'm going to share it anyways. Okay. Because it's in the Bible, right? I was reading a book, and this book was talking about, like, how do we teach the really hard, really dark parts of the scripture? Like, how are we supposed to approach that as teachers of God's word, as pastors? Like, how do we approach that? And one of the examples I gave was Judges chapter 19. And in Judges chapter 19, I'm just going to kind of summarize it for you, just to kind of give you an idea of this book itself, okay? In Judges chapter 19, there's a story of this man. And these men show up to his house and they start beating on his door and they're yelling at him saying, hey, we want to sleep with your son. And if this kind of like brings you back to Sodom and Gomorrah, okay, there's probably some elements to that. And so this man, what he does is he says, no, I'm not gonna let that happen, but here's my concubine, sleep with her instead. And so he gives them his concubine in the chapter 19 of the book of Judges tells us that they sexually assaulted her all night long. And what happens is the next morning, she gets up and she makes her way back to her house and she gets to her front door and dies because of everything that took place the night before. Well, the guy opens the door, sees her laying there, tries to wake her up, but she's dead. And so what does he do? He takes her and chops her up into pieces. And he sends parts of her to all the tribes of Israel. And so the question is, like, what do we do with that? Like there's not a lot of redemptive aspects, if any. Oh, my kids aren't still in here. I didn't even look. But there's not a lot of redemptive aspects to this book. And what's interesting to me is the story of Samson is kind of like the epitome of all of that. Like it's extremely dark. There's not really any redemption at all. And so we get to it and we start to ask the question, like, what do we do with this? Like, how are we supposed to take this? I mean, it's in the Bible, right? So like, what do we do with this book? Well, it's titled Judges, okay? After the 12 main characters that appear in this book, the 12 main judges that appear in this book. Now, when you hear the word judge, I think our minds automatically go to like a courtroom setting, someone who's sitting on a bench and who's determining whether or not someone's guilty or innocent, right? Get that out of your head, okay? When we hear the word judge, especially in the scriptures, I want you to think of a deliverer. Okay, someone that God has raised up and said, hey, your job is to deliver the people of Israel from captivity. That's your job. And so that's what we need to think of when we hear the word judge. And there's 12 main characters in the book of Judges, Samson being the very last one, right? He's the very last one. And it takes place, this book takes place in the time of Joshua, okay? Joshua, who is the successor of Moses, Joshua it takes place right after he dies. In fact, the book right before this, in the very last chapter, Joshua charges the people of Israel as they're getting ready to go into the promised land. He says, before he dies, he looks at them and says, always obey the commands of the Torah. Always obey it. As he's getting ready to die, that's the last thing that he tells him. He says, always obey the commands of the Torah as they're getting ready to go into the promised land. And what's interesting is when you start to read the book of Judges, it doesn't take you very long to realize, man, they failed at this. Like they failed at that charge that Joshua gave them. And so stay with me here because I'm going to give you a little bit of a history lesson in regards to the people of Israel. But God's people, he told them, hey, you're going to enter into the promised land, Canaan, okay? But as you do, your job is to drive out the people that are in there already, the Canaanites. Why? Well, here's what God knew. God knew that they were, if they were to live in that land with those people around them, they would begin to look a lot more like those people than God's people. They would take on their morality. They would take on their idols. They would start to look a lot like the Canaanites rather than the Israelites. And so God tells them, he says, I want you to drive them out of the land. This is your land. Drive them out of that land. Well, when you get into the book of Judges, what you find out in chapter 1 is that they didn't do this. They drove some of them out, but not all of them. They decided, hey, this is enough. Like, we're good now. But they weren't, okay? They weren't good. And in this book, what you're going to see is a cycle kind of begin to take place. And I've got a picture that I want to throw up here. And it's this cycle that begins to take place in the life of the Israelites. Can we throw that picture up real quick? There you go. So this cycle begins to take place in the life of the Israelites all throughout the book of Judges. So the people rebel, okay? They start to pursue idols, right? And what happens is God says, okay, well, I'm going to give you over to the oppression of your enemies in that moment. So he hands them over to their enemies, right? And in the case of Samson in Judges chapter 14, we're going to see that the enemies of God's people in this moment are the Philistines. So he says, all right, because you're pursuing idols, now you're going to be oppressed. Now you're going to be in captivity from God's enemies. And then they go through that and they start to cry out to God, deliver us. They start to groan. God, deliver your people. Please deliver us from captivity. Deliver us from this oppression, right? And so what God does is he raises up a judge to deliver them. So they experience deliverance, and then they experience peace for a certain period of time. But then the cycle continues, and they pursue idols again. And so you see this cycle over and over and over in the life of the Israelites in the book of Judges. And so with that background, I had you turn to Judges chapter 14, and we're going to read the story of Samson. And we're going to do something a little bit different tonight. I'm just going to tell you the story, okay? And as I tell you the story, we're just going to kind of hear it, probably maybe some of us for the very first time. Maybe some of you, you've heard the story of Samson, but maybe you've forgotten some of it, and you're gonna need to experience it again tonight. But we're gonna like listen to a story, and then I'm just going to draw some things out for us, and then hopefully show us as we leave here, like, what do we do with this, right? Like, how does this point us to Jesus? So with that background, Judges chapter 14, and actually before that, the story of Samson begins kind of miraculously in the chapter before, in chapter 13. And in chapter 13, what we're told is that the Israelites have gone through this cycle. They've failed at pursuing God. They've taken on the idols of the people that they were supposed to drive out. And so God's handed them over to the oppression, right, of their people, and they failed at that. And God hands them over to the Philistines. And in chapter 13, we're told that the angel of the Lord visits a man named Manoah and his wife. And he looks at them, and you have to understand this, Manoah's wife is barren. She can't have kids. And the angel of the Lord who visits them tells them, he says, hey, I know that you can't have kids, but you're going to. You're going to have a son, and he's going to begin to deliver Israel from the oppression of the Philistines. That's going to happen. And he says, but here's what needs to happen. Your son needs to be a Nazirite. Now, what's a Nazirite? This is important for us to understand. A Nazirite was essentially just a vow that someone took, okay, in regards to their relationship with the Lord. It comes from Numbers chapter 6, verse 1. And you can read that later. But what this vow did is anyone who took it, when you took this vow, you said, okay, I'm not going to drink any alcohol or touch any grapes from the vine that is turned into alcohol. So I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to cut my hair. And I'm not going to touch anything that's dead, whether it's a dead person or dead animal, anything that's dead, I'm not going to touch. This was all a part of the Nazirite vow. And what's interesting about this is the Nazirite vow was something that anyone could do. Anyone could take this vow, and it was for a temporary amount of time. It wasn't like an extended period. It was just for a temporary amount of time. Well, what we're going to see is that for Samson, Samson is set apart before he's even born to be a Nazirite. So he had no choice in it. And it was for his entire life that he was to be a Nazirite, to pursue this vow to the Lord. So fast forward, let's pick up in chapter 14. Samson's a grown man now. And in verse 1, it says this. It says, Samson went down to Timnah and saw a young Philistine woman there. He went back and told his father and his mother, I have seen a young Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as a wife. Okay? What's interesting about this is if you were to literally translate this verse, what Samson's saying here is he's saying, have I seen a woman? Okay? Have I seen a woman? Now, mom and dad, go get her for me. Like, I've seen her. It's time for you to go get her for me. And here's what's interesting about this. His parents no doubt remember back in chapter 13, the angel of the Lord visiting them and telling them, hey, your son is going to deliver your people from the Philistines. And yet now in chapter 14, Samson is asking them to go get this Philistine woman so that he can marry her. And so that has to be going through their head, right? Like as he's telling them this, like, hey, God told us you were gonna deliver our people from the Philistines. Now you wanna marry one? Like that doesn't make sense to us, right? Well, look at their response in verse 3. In verse 3, it says this, but as his father and mother said to him, can't you find a young woman among your relatives or among any of your people, of our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines for a wife? I want you to focus on that word uncircumcised, okay? Because here's what they're saying. Circumcision was a sign that you were a part of God's family, okay? That was a sign that you were a part of God's family, that you were in, okay? And what they're saying is, hey, we're concerned. Like, if you marry this woman, we're concerned that this person is going to take you away or take your loyalty away from Yahweh. That's what concerns us about you marrying this Philistine woman. But what's Samson's response here? Samson told his father, get her for me. She's the right one for me. Get her for me. She's the right one for me. Now, all throughout the book of Judges, here's what we have to know. Over and over and over again, one of the descriptors of the Israelite people is what? They did what was right in their own eyes. In other words, they did what was right in their own eyes, not necessarily what God said was right. And we see that here in the life of Samson. Samson embodies the Israelite people here. And essentially what he says is she's the right one for me. She's the right one in my eyes. That's the one that I'm going to go for, right? All throughout the book, they say that, and we see that represented in the life of Samson here. And here's what I think is so interesting about this. Remember, God's people, they're living among the Philistines right now, okay? They're enemies, right? They're living amongst their enemies who have occupied the promised land, and they're under their rule, but everything seems really peaceful. Like Samson's able to kind of go back and forth, like without any fear of persecution or like anyone like wanting to do something to him because of his faith in Yahweh. Like there, it seems really peaceful right now. This to me is why verse 4 is so interesting when you read it, because it says this, now his father and mother did not know this was from the Lord. Talking about this desire for this Philistine woman, okay? His mother and father did not know that this was from the Lord, who wanted the Philistines to provide an opportunity for a confrontation. At that time, the Philistines were ruling Israel. Here's why that's so interesting to me, because God is going to use this to bring about a confrontation in the life of Samson and ultimately in the life of the Israelites, okay? He's going to use this to bring about a confrontation in their life. Why? Because something is missing from that cycle that we talked about. You remember that picture? Like, something is missing, and here's what it is. Israel is no longer crying out to be rescued. They're no longer crying out to God. Like, they're no longer groaning to God, hey, rescue us from this oppression. Why? Because they are so accommodated to the lifestyle now. They're so acclimated to the lifestyle that the Philistines provide them and offer them, right? The values, the idols, they've taken it on and said, hey, that's just what we do now. Like, that's who we are. And this is such a dangerous place to be in. Like, let's put it in our context. This is such a dangerous place for us to be in when you are no longer characterized by your devotion to Jesus, but actually you look more like the culture, you look more like society than you do a follower of Jesus. And that's where Israel has found itself in this moment. They're in captivity, but they don't really even care anymore. They've just accepted it and said, we're gonna be a part of this now. They're no longer crying out to be rescued. And I think also this is a huge temptation for churches as well, right? Like, we want to bring as many people in here as we can, so we're going to look as much like the world as society as possible. And because of that, we're not really going to, like, talk about the hard things. We're not really going to, like, talk about sin or things like that because it makes people feel uncomfortable. And I think what's interesting also is God is going to use all of this. He's going to use all the bad things about Samson, his violent temper, his desire for sex. He's going to use all of these to bring about this confrontation. Joni Erickson Tada, she says it this way, and I think, and she's not really talking about the book of Judges here, but I think it applies. She says, sometimes God permits what he hates to accomplish that which he loves. Keep that in the back of your head because we're going to come back to that. But sometimes God permits what he hates to accomplish what he loves. Let's move on. So Samson, in verse 5, he goes down to Timnah, okay? Some time has passed, and he goes back down to Timnah with his parents, and what happens is he finds himself face-to-face with a lion, most likely a mountain lion, okay? Not like a lion that you would see, like, in Africa or something like that. Most likely a mountain lion, but regardless, he finds himself face-to-face with a lion. And it says, in that moment, the Spirit of the Lord comes upon him, and he tears that lion to pieces, limb to limb, okay? Just tears it to pieces. Well, remember his Nazirite vow? What's one thing he's not supposed to do? Touch dead things, right? Well, that's kind of like gone out of his head, okay? He tears it to pieces. And so what he should have done is he should have ran to the temple and cleansed himself. But instead, he's so focused on that woman, on that girl. He's so focused on getting to her that he's like, yeah, whatever. I'm going straight to her. In verses 8 and 9, we fast forward again. And this time, some time has passed, and Samson decides, okay, I think it's time for me to marry her, right? It's time for me to marry her. And so he goes back down to Timnah. But before he gets there, he decides, you know what? I want to see what that dead lion looks like. Like, I want to see what it looks like right now. And so he goes back to that lion to see what the carcass looks like. And something interesting has happened in this lion. Typically, like with dead things, what happens? Like, maggots begin to surface in it, like all these just disgusting things. Well, he gets to this carcass, and there's bees that have taken over this lion in the body of this lion, and honey has started to form and develop. And so what he does is he reaches in and he scoops out some honey and he starts eating it. Like, pretty disgusting, right? But remember, think back to that vow, that Nazirite vow. Not supposed to touch dead things. Again, just kind of like gone out of his head. Like, he's not worried about that vow. Like, he's not worried about what it looks like to follow the Lord. And one of the things that I forgot to mention about the vow is you would take this vow to kind of like spend some time intensely focused on what God wants you to do. That's why you're taking this vow. You're not just taking this vow to like look better than everyone and say, look, I'm not drinking alcohol or I'm not cutting my hair. Like, you're doing it so that you can intensely focus on God and what he wants you to do. It's out of Samson's head. Like, he's not worried about it, even though he's committed to it. He's not worried about it at all. Well, he scoops out some honey, eats it, and then he goes down to Timnah to prepare for this wedding. And you get to verse 10 of chapter 14, and in verse 10 it says this, his father went to visit the woman, and Samson prepared a feast there. Okay, as young men were accustomed to do. So before the wedding, Samson decides, hey, I'm gonna prepare a feast. And this is a 7-day long feast. And it sounds innocent, right? But that word feast, if we were to translate it from the Hebrew, what it would be better translated is something that resembles kind of like a kegger, okay? There's a lot of alcohol involved in this feast. Well, again, Nazirite vow, what's Samson not supposed to do? Alcohol, touch anything from the vine, like all of that. So he's like 2 for 2 now, like dead animals, dead things, alcohol. This vow is just not in his head. He's not worried about it, right? He's not worried about it. He disregards this Nazirite vow. And while he's at this feast, he decides, hey, I'm gonna play a joke. I'm gonna try and win some money from the Philistine men. And so he gives them a riddle, and he says, hey, if you can answer this riddle, I'll give you, I think it's like 50 articles of clothing, which is like a lot of money. If you can't guess it in 3 days or something like that, he's like, you're going to give me 50 articles of clothing, okay? And here's the riddle in verse 14. He says, out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. So he gives them this riddle and says, all right, if you don't get it, then you're going to give me a lot of money. And so what they do is they know Samson's weakness for women. And so they go to this woman that he's supposed to marry, and they tell her, you need to get the answer out of him. And if you don't, we're going to kill you and your father. And so she goes to Samson and gets the answer out of Samson. And look what happens in verse 19. She tells them, and they get the answer, and they tell Samson. In verse 19, it says, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully on him, and he went down to Ashkelon and killed 30 of their men. He stripped them and gave their clothes to those who had explained the riddle. In a rage, Samson returned to his father's house. So in a rage, he kills these people who answered this riddle, who came up with the answer to this riddle. Well, Samson, we're told, returns home after 7 days. And as he returns home to marry this woman, her father, he finds out, has actually given her to another man, to a Canaanite man. And Samson becomes kind of enraged again. And her father looks at him and says, hey, instead of her, why don't you take her sister who's better looking anyways, okay? What a great father, right? Like such a healthy relationship there. And here's the thing, guys. What do you not do to Samson? You don't tell Samson what to do, right? Like, you don't tell him what to do or who to love. Like, that's Samson's deal. And so at that time, Samson pulls, I think, what's probably the best prank ever. Okay, look at what it says in chapter 15, verses 3 and 5. Samson said to them, this time I will be blameless when I harm the Philistines. So he went out and caught 300 foxes. Okay, that's wild in and of itself. Okay, he took torches, turned the foxes tail to tail, and he put a torch between each pair of tails. He ignited the torches and released the foxes into the grain of the Philistines, and he burned the piles of grain and the standing grain as well as the vineyards and olive groves. Okay, so like imagine that scene. Like he's caught 300 foxes and he has them like just like, I'm picturing like Samson just like hanging on to them like by their tails, and then he lights them on fire and sends them into the grains and just burns it all up. And as funny as that sounds, here's the thing. The only one who's about to get burned from this is Samson. Because look what verse six says. Then the Philistines asked, "Who did this?" They were told it was Samson, the Timnite's son-in-law, because he took Samson's wife and gave her to his companion. So the Philistines went to her and her father and burned them to death. So Samson, right, like, because he can't control himself, loses this woman and her father, this woman that he supposedly loved, loses them. They go and they burn them to death. Samson kills a lot of people. And here's what I think we're meant to see at this point, okay? There's really no difference between Samson and the Philistines. Like, where's the difference at? There should be, right? Like, this is a judge that God has raised up to deliver the people of God from oppression, but there's no difference. They look exactly the same. And the question that I think is beginning to surface is, how can God actually use such a flawed person? So keep that in the back of your head as we move on. And in this story, the violence is just going to continue to grow, okay? Chapter 15, in verse 10, it says this. So the men of Judah said, "Why have you attacked us?" They're talking to the Philistines here. "Why have you attacked us?" And they replied, "We have come to tie Samson up and pay him back for what he did to us." Talking about the burning of the fields, of the vineyards, right? "Why have you done this?" And so the Philistines, they've come to take Samson prisoner. But they decided to do that, we're going to actually use the people of God, the people of Judah. We're going to use them to take Samson prisoner. And what's interesting to me is, the people of God so badly wanted to remain at peace with the Philistines that they would even go against God. They're willing to go against God himself to remain at peace. They're like, "Hey, we know Samson has been raised up by God himself, but we'll do it. Yeah, we'll definitely go and tie him up and bring him to you. Just don't do anything to us," right? We're talking about God's very own people. This is how far gone they are. They would rather stay in the peace, the false peace that the world, that the Philistines offer them, than worship the one true God who gives them true peace. They would rather do that than follow Yahweh himself. So we're told that 3,000 men from the tribe of Judah, 3,000 men go up to tie Samson and bring him back to the Philistines. But again, we're told in chapter 15 that the Spirit of the Lord comes over him and he finds the jawbone of a donkey and he kills 1,000 men that day with the jawbone of a donkey. And right after this, here's what is so interesting to me. Chapters 13, 14, and 15, not one time have we heard Samson, like, speak to God or talk to God. Not one time have we heard Samson, like, spend some time in prayer and just, like, maybe he did, okay, but it's not recorded. Well, you get to chapter 15, after he's killed 1,000 men, we see in verse 18, it says this, "He became very thirsty, and he called out to the Lord, 'You have accomplished this great victory through your servant. Must I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?'" How clueless is this guy, right? Like, he has no idea that God has been with him the entire time. The Spirit of the Lord has come upon him over and over and over again. And he's like, okay, Where are you at, God? Like, I did this great thing. I killed all these men, and now you're gonna let me die of thirst. Real cool. He's so clueless, he doesn't realize that God has been with him the entire time. Well, we come to the final chapter of Samson's life in chapter 16. And Samson is no closer to leading God's people out of captivity at this point. And in verse 1, we're told Samson went to Gaza. Gaza is the capital city of the Philistines, okay? So he goes to Gaza, and it says what? It says he saw a prostitute and went to bed with her. This cycle, right? This cycle just keeps going in his life. It keeps going and going and going. And it's a cycle that's gonna eventually take him to a place that he can't come back from. But he sleeps with this prostitute, and in the middle of the night, the Philistines surround the building that he's in. And we're told that he escapes, okay? And notice what it says in verse 3, or maybe what it doesn't say. Okay, in verse 3, it says this. But Samson stayed in bed only until midnight. Then he got up, took hold of the doors of the city gate along with the two gateposts, and he pulled them out, bar and all. He put them on his shoulders and took them to the top of the mountain overlooking Hebron. Here's what I want you to see, and you're going to see this in chapter 16, but not one time in chapter 16 is God's spirit mentioned. Not one time. And I think that's intentional. Why? Because what I think we're meant to see here is that Samson is now more Philistine than he is Israelite. God's spirit has left the dude. It's no longer there. He's more Philistine than he is Israelite now. And remember, if you go back to chapter 15, verse 20, it says that he judged Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines, okay? Keep that in your head because we're going to come back to it. But Samson escapes, okay, escapes what they were trying to do. They were trying to capture him. He escapes, and then he finds himself in bed with another girl, okay? Cycle. He finds himself in bed with another girl. This time, this is the girl that we're probably all familiar with, Delilah, right? We're familiar with this one. Well, the Philistines come to Delilah and they tell her, hey, when you sleep with him, we need you to ask him questions on where his strength comes from. We need answers. We need to know how to capture this dude. Like, where does his strength come from? And so she goes to Samson over and over and over again and ask him, like, hey, where does your strength come from? Where does your strength come from? Where does it come from? And he lies to her over and over and over again. And eventually she looks at him and she says, you don't really love me, do you? And that's when Samson goes, okay, all right, here's where my strength comes from. It comes from my hair, okay? That's where it comes from. It comes from my hair. And so in the middle of the night, she ties him up and she cuts his hair. Remember, Nazirite vow, right? Not supposed to cut the hair. But he's broken every aspect of this vow up until this point. So what's a little bit of hair, right? Like he's broken it up to this point. So what's a little bit of hair? Well, what Samson did not know is that the power of God that God gave him was not bound to his hair. It wasn't bound to his hair. It wasn't magic. It was actually his relationship with Yahweh. That's where his power was in or was from, right? And this is why verse 20 of chapter 16 to me is so sad, because it says this, then she cried, talking about Delilah, Samson, the Philistines are here. And when he awoke from his sleep, he said, I will escape as I did before and shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. He did not know that the Lord had left him. He thought everything was normal. Imagine being in that. I wonder how many people sit just like on Sundays in our services and just feel like, man, everything's good, right? And don't realize, man, God's not working in you. He's gone. He's gone. Samson didn't realize it. He thought everything was normal. He tried to do everything he did before, and he couldn't. He did not realize the Lord had left him. And so what happens is the Philistines capture him in this moment, and we're told that they gouge out his eyes. They gouge out his eyes, and this is, you get to verse 22, and so Samson's in captivity. And this is why verse 22 is like just kind of odd, right? Verse 22 says this, but his hair began to grow back after it had been shaved. Like, why record that? Like, that's what hair does, right? It grows. So why is that a necessary detail for us to know? Well, here's kind of what I think is happening here. The Philistines knew, okay? They knew that Samson had broken his vow. They knew that he had touched dead things. They knew that he had cut his hair. And so in their minds, they're thinking, who cares if his hair grows back? He's already broken that vow with the God that he worships, and that God is gone. He's not coming back. But here's the thing, guys, and here's what is so so important for us to understand here. God is not bound by vows, okay? God is not bound by our obedience to vows. His strength isn't in us obeying as well or as good as we possibly can. But actually, God is bound by his faithfulness to us. That's what they didn't understand. And in verse 23, we see the real battle begin to take place. It says, now the Philistine leaders gathered together to offer a great sacrifice to their god, Dagon. They rejoice and said, our God has handed over our enemy, Samson, to us. So here's the real battle. Yahweh and Dagon, who's stronger, right? Who's going to win here? And this leads to verse 28 that I want us to see. And for the first time, Samson expresses some semblance of faith. So they call, the Philistines call for Samson to be brought before them, and we're told so that he can bring humor to them, so that he can make them laugh. And he asks them, he says, will you put me between two pillars, because I can't see, so that I can feel. And so they put Samson between two pillars, right? And in verse 28, it says this, he called out in that moment, he called out to the Lord, Lord God, please remember me. Strengthen me, God, just once more with one act of vengeance. Let me pay back the Philistines for my two eyes. Now, some people think, okay, Samson's not expressing faith here. Like, he just wants vengeance again. And I understand, like, maybe where you're coming out with that, but the book of Hebrews chapter 11 tells us, in this moment, Samson expressed faith. For the very first time, he expressed faith. And we're told that he pushes those pillars and the temple that they were in comes crashing down and kills everyone, including Samson, in that moment. So what do we do with that, right? What are we supposed to learn there as we think about this story? I want to give you just five observations from that story that I think are important for us to take away. First one is this. God remains unconditionally committed to his promises. And I think this is so important for us because I think there are moments in our lives where we feel like, man, we failed God so much, he's gone. Like he's frustrated with me, he's angry with me, he doesn't want any part of me. But here's what you need to understand. God's not faithful to you because of your obedience. He's faithful to you because of who he is. God remains unconditionally committed to his promises. And we don't have to go very far to see this, right? Judges chapter 2, verse 1. God is talking to the Israelites in chapter 2, verse 1. And he looks at them and he says this. He says, I will never break my covenant with you. Not, hey, I'm gonna remain faithful as long as you do. No, he says, I will never break my covenant with you. Have you ever had someone break a promise with you? Like maybe something like it felt really silly. Like, I feel like my kids always ask me to do things. I'm like, yeah. And then I don't. And I'm like, man, I let them down. Darn it. Like, broke that promise. Or maybe it's like a friend, like a really close friend who broke a promise to you and it hurt deeply. Like, you experienced real deep hurt in that moment. But here's what we're meant to see here. God is so committed to never breaking his promises to you. He not only fulfills it despite our sin, but he keeps it by using our own sinfulness. He does it in the life of Samson, right? But he also, like, this is what he does throughout the scriptures. The example that I think of is Acts chapter 2, verse 23. And it says that God used the free and wicked choices of ungodly men to send Jesus to the cross. He used the choices of the free and wicked choices of ungodly men to send Jesus to the cross. God used their wickedness for redemptive purposes. And so he is unconditionally committed to his promises. The next thing that I think we see in this story is that Samson lives impulsively and he's controlled by his desires. We see that like all through this, right? Instead of taking captive his thoughts and his desires, he's controlled by them. You know, the scriptures teach us like, hey, take captive your thoughts, take captive your desires. Don't let them control you, you control them. Be controlled by the Spirit. Samson's got one thing on his mind, and he's like, in the beginning of this story, in chapter 15 and 14, he's like, I don't care about this Nazarite vow. I've got one thing on my mind, and it's that hottie that's waiting for me in Timnah. Like, that's where I'm going, okay? That's where I'm trying to get to. That's all he can think about. And so he lives impulsively. He's captivated. He's controlled by his desires. And then the third thing is this, not only is he controlled by those things, he's also controlled by his temper, right? Like, his temper is always getting him in trouble. And it's a reoccurring theme in the life of Samson. We never see a desire in these three chapters for Samson to save Israel. The only thing that we ever see is his desire to get even with people. That's the only thing we ever see. And I wonder, like, do you ever feel controlled by your temper or your anger? I remember growing up, maybe this will shock some of you, maybe not, but like, I had a really bad temper growing up. And I remember like very vividly, like a moment where my mom sat me down and she told me, she said, Tyler, your temper is gonna ruin your life one day. And I remember that very vividly because it kind of caught me off guard. And we see that in the life of Samson. His temper like leads him to destruction. He's controlled by it. And then remember that question that I asked you, like, how can God use such a flawed person? Well, this leads me to my fourth thing, and it's this: the only people God works through are flawed people. Like, that's the only type of people that God works through. Flawed people, you, me. Like, we are flawed people. Some more than others, obviously, right? Like, we look at Samson, and he's obviously, I would say most of us in here have never killed anyone, okay? If you have, come talk to me afterwards, okay? But everyone in here is flawed, everyone. And God loves to work through sinners like you and like me to accomplish his purposes. And I think about my own life, and like, what's amazing to me is moments that I look back on, moments that were frustrating, and even in the moment I felt like were disastrous for me, I can look back on them and see God was working in those moments. And I bet you can too if you just stopped and looked. The only people God works through are flawed people. And then the last observation, remember Samson, this happened over the span of 20 years, right? And so the last observation that I see from this is this: our choices every day lead us either closer to Jesus or further away. They're leading us either closer to Jesus or further away from him. This is true in the life of Samson. It's true in your life and in my life. Kylie and I, we talk about this often. We talk about how small decisions over time can lead us closer to each other or further apart. Very rarely are we making like giant decisions in our relationship that's leading Kylie and I like further or closer together. It's small decisions. And what we talk about all the time is like these small decisions can lead us further apart, and 10 years will go by and we'll look at each other and go, man, we don't even recognize each other anymore. And so how do we fight that? By intentionality, right? Like realizing that and thinking about that and being intentional with each other. And so my question for you, because this is the same concept in your walk with Jesus, are you making active, intentional choices to grow closer to him? Are you doing that? Because these choices you're making every day are either going to lead you closer to Jesus or further away from him. And then remember, when we read this, we need to ask the question, what is this telling me about Jesus? How is this pointing me to Jesus? Well, we get a glimpse of this, right? If we go back to chapter 13, verse 5, the angel of the Lord comes to Samson's parents, and he says this. He says, "For indeed you will conceive and give birth to a son. You must never cut his hair, because the boy will be a Nazarite to God from birth, and he will begin to save Israel." He will begin to save Israel. Now, what's interesting, and I'm just going to like point this out, a lot of scholars here, and I tend to agree with them, a lot of scholars agree that the reference here, anytime you come across in the Old Testament, the angel of the Lord, this is what you would call a Christophany, okay, which is Jesus Christ, the pre-incarnate Jesus Christ, making himself known in that moment, spending time with someone, like coming to be with them. And so if that's the case, which I believe it is, what we see here is we see Jesus Christ himself talking to Samson's parents, and he's telling them, he's saying, hey, the son you're about to have, he's going to begin to save Israel. Well, how does he know that? Because Jesus knows, I'm going to be the one that fully saves them. I'm going to be the one that truly delivers them, right? Samson's not going to be able to complete the deliverance. He's only going to be able to begin it. And when we see that, we're meant to ask the question, okay, well then there has to be, right, a better one, a better deliverer, a greater deliverer. If Samson isn't him, like if Samson's not the guy, there has to be someone who is. In fact, like the most faithful moment of Samson's life is what? His death. Like the most faithful moment Samson experiences his death when he expresses to God, will you give me power again? If we think to Jesus though, Jesus was faithful from life to death. There was never a moment where Jesus wasn't faithful. He succeeded where Samson failed. He is the deliverer we so desperately need, and not just from our physical enemies, but from the enemies of death and sin. And so that's how this story points us to Jesus, is it shows us, hey, Samson failed, and Jesus succeeded. I'm going to ask the band to come back up, and we're going to spend some time in response. And man, there's a lot in this story. I know there's a lot that we covered. We're going to allow the Lord to work. Okay. I don't know what that means for you. Maybe there's some things that you heard in there that you're like, gosh, that really like pricked me a little bit. Like that cut me a little bit. And so I want to challenge you, like don't leave here without wrestling with that.